The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yes, that's right. All present and accounted for. It's the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. As that nice man just said, it's live, it's in color, it's where you get the best in money information. I'm Johnny Dean. Got the Professor Rick Plum standing by with me from Lucia Capital Group, ready to answer your money questions as we are every day, right here, television, radio, internet, etc. And maybe, just maybe, helping you to meet all of your retirement goals. Anyway, besides music, we're going to start things off with a strategy. Actually, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a couple of calls. I know we have some people on hold before the show, so we're going to get to those first. Now, after those calls, we're going to talk about a strategy that's known as pension maximization, which may allow you to take the higher single life pension option while still allowing you to provide, perhaps, your surviving spouse with some income protection. Obviously, this is for married people. If you're single, you have different pension concerns. Now, what does all that mean? Well, we're going to tell you what you need to know all about pension maximization. That's coming up in just a couple of moments. Now, if you got a question for the Brain Trust, you give us a call, as some folks have already done, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Brain Trust standing by to answer those questions. Most of the lines are open, but we still have a couple of folks on hold. So get on board with the Brain Trust. You can do that right now. Send us your emails. You go to wealthed.com, our website. Click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Professor Plum here again today, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. You do know by now, after seeing us and hearing us for these many years, that you need a buckets strategy. Okay, you need one that's tailored specifically to meet your goals and your own needs. You call a professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150. You can meet with an advisor, get your strategy up and running. Everyone's situation is different, and everyone's retirement plan is also different. Again, the number off the air, 800-644-1150. That's at Lucia Capital Group. On the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Once again, 877-752-6637. We're going to take a couple of calls here before we get to the main topics that we want to get to regarding pension max, life insurance, and all that stuff. But anything you want to talk about, Professor Plum is standing by with me to answer those questions. Okay, let's get first to Sally in Oceanside, California. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Yes, I have a tax question. I'm 76 years old, and I do some odd jobs. I'll be earning about $3,000 to $4,000 a year. Can I add that to my Roth IRA?
Yes. There is no age limit to doing a Roth IRA contribution, to making a Roth IRA contribution. Unlike a traditional IRA, which does have an age limit, once you get to your required minimum distribution year, you no longer can contribute to a traditional IRA. Roth IRA doesn't have that issue. So if you're working, that's a key, you're working, and you make less than the thresholds for overall adjusted gross income, yeah, you can put that $3,000, if that's what your earnings are, you can put $3,000. You can put 100% of your earnings up to the cap of $6,500 into a Roth IRA, even if you're 75, 85, 95 years old, as long as you have earned income.
So you can put in as much as $6,500.
Only if you make that much.
Yeah. But I just want to know, for my own information.
Yes.
Okay. So then you just put it as an income on your tax form?
Right. It doesn't show up anywhere. So the income still shows up on your tax return, because a Roth IRA is not a deductible contribution. So it doesn't show up on the tax return. So if you show that you made $5,000 self-employment income, then you're going to show that on your tax return. You can put the money into a Roth IRA. But it does, there's no deduction. It doesn't help you on current income taxes. It's just a nice place to put the money for either you, if you need it later in life, the earnings will be tax-free, or for your heirs.
So if you only make, you said $5,000, then you put it on your taxes. But if you only make $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000, you still have to put it on, claim it on your tax form?
Yes. And yeah, you will file if you're doing odd jobs for other people, you're supposed to show what you earned on a tax return. And since you're basically being self-employed,
you put it into the Roth.
Right. You have to show it as income before you can put it in the Roth.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, that was my question. Thank you so much,
Sally,
for your help. And I've been listening to you guys when you used to be young and beautiful.
Oh, in other words, I'm not young and beautiful anymore. Thank you.
We can admit that. Sally, I appreciate that.
I know I'm not young anymore, but I was sure hoping for the beautiful part to stay.
Well, no, we've been looking for an easy way to break this to you.
Oh, man.
And Sally, you know, did it. So thank you, Sally. We appreciate that. Those of us who still are young and somewhat.
I was in my 30s when we started doing this.
I was, let's see.
Yeah.
I was 29, I guess. 27. 27? Wow. I got a kid who's 27. All right. Anyway, I guess, all right, we're not young anymore. All right, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Let's move along to Lee in Las Vegas. Hello, Lee.
Hi, Don and Rick. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You've helped me a million times before, but just had a quick question. I've been converting my IRAs into my Roths to reduce my RMDs when I'm 70 and a half. But is there a limit as to how many you can do? Because I have a number of IRAs that I've been converting, and I have to break them up. Is there a limit as to how many you can do in a year?
No, you can, you know, do it as many as you want to do, as much paperwork as you want to deal with. So yeah, you can. The limit is the amount of money you have in traditional IRAs. You can't do more than that, but you can, you know, do one a month, do one a week, do as many as you want to do. You can do as many conversions. They'll look at it as how many did you do in cumulative form over the year, but that's the only limiting factor is how much in IRAs do you have.
Oh, okay. I didn't know whether the government limited you as to how many you could convert over.
Well, what is
it's just paperwork. I mean, if you're opening different accounts for each different conversion.
I am.
That's just
I
a
am.
Lot of paperwork, and it's a lot of management headache.
Yeah, well, it's the way I set it up, so I guess I got to deal with it. But I just wanted to make sure that I was doing it correctly, and I do appreciate your input and letting me know that I'm on the right track here. I appreciate it.
All right, Lee. Thank you for the call.
Well, he's on the right track as far as doing the conversions. I don't know if he's on the right track from management standpoint, having a lot of multiple IRAs,
now,
but that's up to him.
But
if he can manage it, he can manage it.
Well, that's true. Now, this is for conversions, and we have said before, too, that on a conversion, I mean, if you have separate IRAs doing Roth conversions, it can help you later on if you ever wanted to undo it.
It's easier
for whatever
to
reason.
Undo a specific. So if let's say he's got multiple different stocks and he's worried that one of those stocks will tank.
Yes.
And if one of them tanks, he doesn't want to have to pay the taxes on the conversion. He has until October 15th of the following year. So he has some time to undo it. But if he's got it commingled in with a lot of other stocks in a Roth account, one stock drops but the other stock takes off, you can't undo just the loser.
No.
Because you undo the percentage that contribution you're undoing takes of the whole portfolio.
Right.
So undoing it from a single account size status is a lot easier from the undo point of view, but it sure does make a lot of paperwork.
It can cause some undue hassles is what you're saying.
And then once you get past October 15th of the year, after the year you did the conversions, you can bring them all back together because then you can't undo them anyway.
Right. So if he did it this year, he's got another year plus, well over a year plus,
right,
to be able to do this.
Year and a half.
To
maintain the separate accounts. And
yeah. But each one does have its own paperwork and things like that.
Each account.
Now, if you have a Roth, though, I mean, what do you need? What sort of, you set it up and you have some paperwork to deal with there. But after that, how much work is there?
Well, there's not a lot of work. It's just a lot.
You get statements.
Just the paperwork to set it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as bad as buying a house. I'm not saying that, but it's still paperwork. It's still, you got to fill out all this paperwork, do everything. And if you're comfortable doing that, fine. I mean, that's up to you. And if it suits the purpose, if he wants to preserve that ability to undo a specific issue, and that's, I'm guessing, as to why he's doing it that way, then that would be something to do. The only other reason I can think of doing multiple ones.
Multiple Roths, you're saying?
Multiple
or
accounts.
IRA.
Multiple accounts would be for some reason. If you wanted to name, and you can do this with one account, but a lot of people will say, well, this account is for little Johnny, and this account is for little Debbie, and I don't want them, you know, Johnny likes McDonald's, and Debbie likes Disney, so we got McDonald's over here and Disney over here, whatever the case may be, and they keep them separate.
Little Debbie, huh?
Little Debbie's.
Yeah. I would think little Debbie would be more into the, you know, the cakes and the pastries.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. Now, and keep in mind, too, that with regard to, say, traditional IRAs, it doesn't matter how many accounts you have, different accounts for required minimum distribution purposes, you put them all together.
When it comes to required minimum distributions, you calculate it together, yes.
Yeah.
You don't have to put them together. You just calculate it together.
No, but it's calculated together. Right? There are people who don't want to necessarily have separate IRAs because they think they have to take a required minimum distribution from each one, but you don't have to do that.
Not in the IRA world. You know, IRA accounts, the IRS does not see accounts. They see value, basically.
Yes.
We used to do them separately. We used to calculate each IRA distribution separately from a required minimum distribution status because each IRA may have a different beneficiary, and each IRA may have a different method. Thankfully, they cleaned all that up about 15 years ago,
and we don't have
to deal with that anymore.
That's right. And again, that's on traditional IRAs. There is no required minimum distribution for the owner of a Roth IRA. Okay, gotta take a break. We're going to come back with more Pension Max, life insurance, all this stuff. Your phone calls invited, 877-PLANNER. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, standing by, talking to you about your money and anything that's on your mind. We're going to be getting into this pension maximization topic shortly, but if you have anything else that you want to talk about, doesn't matter, we will talk to you about that. Social Security, retirement, annuities, pensions, insurance, doesn't matter. We will talk to you about it right here on the program. Oh, by the way, speaking of Social Security, that is one of our big topics. At least that's one of the ones that the callers and emailers want to talk about most, especially with all these semi-new laws that have taken place. So as a result, we've been doing this for quite a while now. The Social Security Show happens every Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm hosting here along with Professor Rick Plum, and we do this only at wealtheds.com. It's online, W-E-A-L-T-H. wealtheds.com. You can send your emails to us. We'll answer them on that program. You can also call a special hotline that's available to you. You can check it out at wealtheds.com. You leave it on our, it's just like an answering machine. It's very cool. I think it even flashes when somebody leaves a message. Awesome. Anyway, you can leave your question there with as much detail as possible, and we'll answer it right there. We'll play it on the show and answer it for you on the Social Security Show. Once again, it's only at wealtheds.com. It's every Tuesday afternoon, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, featuring the two of us. Live here on the program, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. So I mentioned this earlier in the hour, pension maximization. Now, this sounds like something weird. But first of all, before we get into this strategy, talk for a second, Professor Plum. Why are pensions important? Because you hear that they're all disappearing, but actually they're not.
Well, there are still a lot of people that do have pensions. And we talk a lot about Social Security and the options for when to claim, how to claim, and get the best use of a Social Security benefit. Well, the same can be true in pensions. Pensions are a form of direct income. It is not market-based to the recipient. It's just a check that they receive every month. Sounds a little like Social Security in that respect, except for many pensions do not have a COLA. Some do, depending on whether you work for the government or a private sector. But when you have a pension, you have choices. Specifically, when you have a pension and you're married, you have choices. If you want to provide a benefit for a surviving spouse, you're going to have to change the benefit that you receive and take less of a monthly benefit to allow at least some portion, up to 100% of it, to continue for your surviving spouse. Now, this is different than Social Security. Social Security, my benefit is my benefit. If I want to, the survivor benefit from my work record doesn't impact my benefit. I get to choose when I take my benefit, and when I take my benefit, that's I get it. And if somebody gets a spousal benefit from me, fine, it doesn't affect me.
If I want to leave
a survivor benefit, fine, it doesn't cost me. If I don't want to leave a survivor benefit, it doesn't affect me. My benefit is my benefit in the Social Security world. That is not the same statement as in a pension. If I have earned a pension, maybe I've earned a pension of $2,000 a month, through the formula, it says that when I retire, I'll get $2,000 a month. But I'm married, and I want to make sure that if I die too soon, that something, some portion of that pension continues on for my spouse. Any amount of money I leave for my spouse is going to come off the top of mine. Not a direct dollar for dollar, but they have to look at the ages and the cost of what's going on, because the benefit is the benefit. And so they expect it to be paid out over a certain period of time. When we add another life into the mix, now the pension gets paid out over a longer period of time, or potentially a longer period of time, depending upon the age of that new person that we're introducing into the equation. And so because it's going to be paid out over a longer period of time, they need to reduce mine. And so to provide for that survivor option, I have to take less while I'm alive.
So you might take, instead of $2,000, which would be your single life that just lasts for your life, you might take $1,600.
Right, and
like that
$1,600 means that my wife may get $800 a month if I die. It may mean, depending upon ages, it may mean she gets the full $1,600. But we have to look at it, how do we make a decision of how much we have to leave for that individual? So we look at the rest of our portfolio. If I die, you know, very soon after retirement, very soon after starting to take that pension, how much of that pension will my wife need, my surviving spouse need, to maintain the standard of living that I want to provide for her or them through the rest of their life? If we already have saved up $10 million and this is kind of a drop in the bucket and it's not really needed, well, then I don't have to take a survivor option. Now, I do. To take a life-only option, I have to get my spouse to sign off on that, because they have to sign that they are giving up any rights to that pension in the event I die. But if they've got plenty of other money, fine, they'll sign it. If the pension is a large pension, is the majority of our retirement income, and it's going to be needed for the surviving spouse, then it's unlikely, A, you're going to get them to sign, but unlikely you want to get them to sign. You're going to leave something for them. You're going to have to take a lower pension. Now, what are you doing when you actually take a lower monthly pension for the rest of your life? You're basically paying a premium to ensure that there's something left over after you're gone for your surviving spouse for the rest of their life. So you are actually buying a life insurance policy. The premium is the discount you had to take in your pension during your lifetime to make sure that there's something left when you die. Now the problem is, how much insurance did you actually buy? There's no way to know. Because until you die, and you see how, and until your spouse dies, there's no way to know how much in benefits she's going to receive or he's going to receive. In fact, the premium continues. What happens if my spouse dies before me? Most pensions, I'm still paying that premium for the rest of my life, even though there is no insurance going to be paid. And so a lot of people don't like the idea of taking the lesser amount to ensure that. And some people will like to look at the odds of, well, what are the odds? If I'm the younger by a significant margin than the other person's a lot older, what are the odds of a survivor benefit? So a lot of people, what they will do, instead of taking this discount on their pension, is buy a life insurance policy. They look at it and they say, if I die too soon, my spouse needs X amount of dollars per month, and we can kind of quantify that and say, if they need X amount of dollars, their life expectancy, or a little bit longer than life expectancy, we need to provide X amount of dollars. It's a math equation. We can say how much money we probably need, and we can identify and basically tailor it to the needs, and then say, okay, that is going to cost X amount of dollars. You're still taking a reduction. You're still paying a premium. And if you look at that premium compared to the premium on the pension, you can make a decision of which one is more efficient given your situation.
So let's say it's $2,000 a month, my pension. That's just for me only.
Right.
I can reduce it to $1,600 and have it continue to for my wife. But that $400 a month reduction is the same thing, essentially, as taking $400 a month and insuring for my wife to allow her to take a pension for the rest of her life. Now, the question is $400 a month a good a value, or should I take some other amount of money, whatever it is, and put it toward an actual life insurance policy?
And so now we can take a look at tailoring. We know that the bogey is $400 a month, but what is the death benefit need? Well, if that was a 50% survivor benefit, where it was only going to provide $800 a month for my surviving spouse, and my surviving spouse is relatively healthy. We expect him or her to live another 25 years. After we're 60, 65 years old, we expect them to live to 90, 95 years old. That's about $150,000. Can I buy $150,000 worth of death benefit for $400 a month, or somewhere close to that?
That's the question. Now, it becomes a question of age, too.
And are you healthy?
Because if you're doing this at age, call it 65, as opposed to maybe having had this insurance policy in place for 10, 12 years, May be more expensive than you think. So there's more to talk about. 877-PLANNER. Give us a call. Any money questions? We're coming right back. Is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum are taking your calls. Got a lot of stuff to talk about before the top of the hour, but your phone calls do come first. 877-PLANNER is the number. And by the way, speaking of money advice and some of the best money advice you're going to get, can I say that? Sure, I can say that because I happen to believe it. In my personal opinion, this is the best advice you can get. But you're also going to get it in person, not just on this show. If you want to meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum included, Terry Keyes included, whom you hear on the show from time to time, and the local advisors, wherever you happen to be, you can meet the Brain Trust at any one of our many locations across the country where these 2016 Retirement Income Strategies workshops are being held. There are a few more left. You go to our website, wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Click on the Live Events tab. And we will see you in those various cities. Once again, it's all free. You can meet the Brain Trust, get your money questions answered, and learn all about retirement income strategies. So once again, wealthed.com. And you can find out all the specific cities right there. All right, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We're going to take up a couple of calls, and we're going to get back to this whole idea of pension maximization, the strategies using life insurance, because really it can work for people. You just have to know what the numbers are. So let's get to Minneapolis next. Jean is on the line. Hi, Jean.
Hi.
How can we help you today?
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
It was echoing. I had a question. You two was talking to the lady about the putting money in a Roth. Can you still put money in a Roth after you filed your taxes? Like, you could got to April 15th, but if you've already filed your taxes, can you still put money in a Roth?
Well, were you eligible to put money in for the Roth for this year? You're talking about...
Yes. It's my son, and I told him to put money in his Roth, and he said, well, he had already filed his taxes. And I said, well, it doesn't show up on your tax return.
Yeah, he can do it.
Anyway.
He can do it.
He can.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's got earned income and all that stuff,
right? Oh,
yeah,
he's got lots of earned income. That's why I told him he should do that.
As long as he doesn't have too much income, he's fine.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. I think he's in the, but I can ask him.
Yeah, there are limits. What are the limits, Professor Plum, again?
98,000.
All right. Well, anyway, there's a phase out for, is he single or married?
He's married.
Okay.
Well, that's 183,000. That one I know.
183?
Yeah.
183,000 for, well, that's for 15. It was, it's 184 for 2016. It's 183,000 to 193.
Oh, are you talking about doing it for last year?
Yeah, that's why she's making.
Gene?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted
okay.
him
all
to
right.
do it for 2015.
Okay. All right. There you
and
go.
You've got till the 15th of April. And he said, well, I already filed my taxes. And I thought, well, I didn't think
just
that
do it this matter. Week. Don't worry about it. Just do it this week.
Okay. And then there was another one I had for him, too. I read in Money Magazine, he's got kids in college, and he's taking this American Opportunities credit. And the daughter that's graduating will have to go back next year for a quarter. And it said that you can maybe be able to squeeze up to another $2,000 out of Uncle Sam if you earn no more. Anyway, if you pay your tuition by after January 1st, your child in the child's senior year. I don't understand that, I guess.
Well, now, is she taking a class to finish up her degree, or is
yes,
she starting on an advanced
degree? She has to finish her degree. And I said, I thought that I had just read this in Money Magazine.
Well, you can take the American Opportunity credit 4 years. That's it, only for 4 years, and only for undergraduate studies. Technically, this next class is still for her undergrad degree.
Right.
So she would be, if they haven't taken the American Opportunity credit for 4 years on her, then this will be another year they could take the American Opportunity credit.
They have taken it for 4 years.
Okay, now you go over to the Lifetime Learning Credit. The Lifetime Learning Credit is 20.
This says in Money Magazine, I'll read it. You may be able to squeeze up to $2,000 more out of Uncle Sam. If
right, that's the Lifetime Learning Credit.
No. It says the AOTC.
Well, the American Opportunity Credit is only for 4 tax years. Only for 4 years of...
To do what you have, plan to pay some tuition after January 1st of your child's
right.
senior
if,
year.
Right, like I said, if they have not...
Hang on a second, Gene. Hang on a second.
Gene,
go ahead.
If they have not taken the credit, on four tax returns yet, then this next year, because it's still for the undergraduate degree, would qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. However, if they've already taken the American Opportunity Credit four times for this one child, they're no longer eligible for another $2,000, by the way, it's $2,500, of American Opportunity Credit because they've already done it for 4 years, and that way they'll have to switch over to the Lifetime Learning Credit, which is $2,000, or up to $2,000. So it's all a matter of, have they taken full advantage already four times of the American Opportunity Credit for this child? If they have, they ain't squeezing another one out of it. So that's the way it works.
What is this? Is there must be a income level for this learning credit?
The learning credit's a lot easier to get than the American Opportunity Credit, I think. I can look it up.
Well, you could look it up, yeah. But does that help you out, Gene?
Yeah, I guess it did. I understood here from Money Magazine it sounded like it could squeeze more, even though you'd taken it if you waited till after the first pay the tuition.
Right, and you
but
can.
I will tell him that.
Yes,
you can
right.
If you haven't already done it for four times.
Yeah. Hey, Gene, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. If you have any other questions, hold on. Well, I guess that was in Money Magazine, was it not?
That's what she was saying.
Yeah.
American Opportunity is actually easier to get than the Lifetime Learning. The phase out for the American Opportunity Credit is for a married couple, $160,000 to $180,000. The phase out for the Lifetime Learning Credit is $111,000 to $131,000.
So, and that's more for postgraduate or people who want to go back to school. You can be 60 years old.
Or 6-year undergrad degrees.
6-year. Nobody does that, do they, Professor?
No, usually take 7 or 8.
I was going to say, yeah. 6 year. If you're on the 6-year plan, you're probably on the 7-year plan or the 8-year plan.
But, or, you know, it can be quicker. Some people can do it quicker. I know somebody who did it in 3, got their full 4-year degree in 3 years.
I mean, my wife, I think it took her 6 years, but it wasn't for lack of trying. They just didn't have the classes available. It's, you know, it was, that's the way it was. But now, again, if you want to go back to school, we didn't cover this. You know, we had this topic a while back, not too long ago, on college savings plans, 529s and things like that. And what we, One of the things I really wanted to get into was this whole idea of the American Opportunity Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit, which can be a big help to people who are either in school for their 4 years, or if you want to go back to school at some point after those 4 years and get another degree or whatever, or get your original degree.
Yeah, and I know what she's talking about, you know, paying it after January, because if you pay the tuition all up front, and maybe you've missed one of the first years, you didn't take the American Opportunity Credit for their freshman year or whatever the case, and you've only taken it for 3 years, if you pay the entire year's tuition at the beginning in August, it's all last year. You can only take the credit for last year because you don't pay anything this year. But if you split it up into last year and this year, you can take the credit for, you know, let's say that it was a $20,000 annual tuition bill for the fall and then spring semesters, $10,000 each semester. Pay $10,000 last year, you get to use the American Opportunity Credit for last year. You pay $10,000 this year, you get to use the American Opportunity Credit this year, as long as you haven't done it more than 40 tax years. You pay all 20 last year, you only paid 20 last year, that's it. It's all last year. If you don't pay anything this year, there's no more credit available for 2016 because you didn't pay anything in 2016.
So the idea then is to split it up, is what you're saying.
If you haven't already done it for the full 4 years that the American Opportunity Credit is available.
When we say 4 years, are we talking? We're talking 4 tax years.
Yeah, you can only get the credit 4 times.
Yeah, so you can
take it. And it has to be for undergraduate tuition.
Right, and again, there are income limits for that. Did we mention those?
160 to 180 for a married couple.
And 80 to 90. So there's it's just half. It's just half of that
for a single individual.
Yeah, and since you brought it up, it's a wonderful credit. If you're allowed, if you can take it, because this is actually what they call a refundable credit to
partially.
Well, yeah, so up to $1,500.
$1,000 is refundable. $1,500 will offset taxes that you owe.
Right.
But even if you don't owe $1,500 in taxes, let's say you don't owe any taxes because of whatever you've got deductions and other things, the $1,000 can be actually refunded to you. So if your tax bill for the year is $1,200 and you've spent, you know, $10,000 on education, you're going to get the full, you know, potentially the full credit. You can use $1,200 of the credit to offset the actual tax liability you owe, the $1,200,
mm-hmm.
and then you can actually get a refund of $1,000 of the credit. So you could use, in that case, $2,200 of the potential 2,500 available, you won't be able to use the whole 2,500.
Yeah, it could get you quite a bit of money back, because oftentimes if somebody owed $1,200 of taxes for the year, they've already paid it through their withholding.
Right.
And all
that. So they're going to get that back. They're going to get all their withholding back, and you know,
an additional $1,000.
Exactly.
And that's what my daughter did. It was. I was standing behind her. She's doing her taxes on TurboTax. And you know, there was a decent refund there. There was a decent refund. You know, it was like $1,200, $1,300 or something like that. And all right, that's very cool. Clicks on the American the next screen after she puts in all the tuition
data.
Wham! This thing went up to $3,700 or something.
An extra $2,500.
Wow! I mean, it was so. Anyway, yeah, that was a wonderful moment in the Dean household, if I may say. We didn't have that back when I was paying. For my college, but of course, when I was in college, it cost about 1/10 of what it costs today. So hey, any little bit helps, and it should. Okay, 877 Planner. We still have some more to talk about on pension maximization. If you've got other ideas, you give us a call. We'll answer those questions first. We got lines open right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust. 877 Planner. 877 PLANNER. More phone calls, etc. When we return. My man, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, standing by talking to you about your money. There's another hour coming up, by the way, in many, if not most, cities across the country. So if you're watching, listening, and you have a question that just can't wait, understand there is another hour coming up. But you can call now, because we do have a couple of lines open. 877-PLANNER is our number, 877-752-6637. Let's move along. Eddie is next up in Houston, Texas. Eddie, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Yes, I have a friend who makes over $250,000. He's 48 years old. And for 2012, 13, and 14, they've been deducting his traditional IRA, $5,500, from his income.
How old is he?
48.
43, okay.
And he makes around $250,000.
Does he have a retirement plan at his employment?
Yes, sir.
Does he participate?
So yes. What kind of plan does he have at his retirement? What kind of retirement plan does he have at his work?
No 401k.
So he has a 401k?
Yes, sir.
Does he contribute to the 401k?
No.
So he never signed up for the 401k?
Yeah, he takes 401k.
So he does the 401k, he makes $200,000 a year, and they're deducting a traditional IRA?
Yes, sir.
The IRS will be sending him a letter shortly.
So what can he do?
He's going to have to take the money out.
He cannot convert it?
Well, it's basically going to be a non-deductible traditional IRA. He can't really take the money out at this point. So the money he put in 2012, 13, and 14, that becomes a non-deductible IRA. So he's going to have to pay the taxes on the deduction that he took. So he put in $5,500. He reduced his taxes by $1,000, $1,500, whatever the number was. He'll have to pay that in taxes plus whatever penalties and interest he has in there. And it's just that now he has after-tax money in his traditional IRA going forward. So now, the IRS has not caught it yet. I just don't think that that's going to take too long for them to catch it.
So he cannot convert all those money at those years?
How much does he have if you looked at every single traditional IRA that he has?
Okay.
How much does he have in traditional IRAs?
Maybe like 20,000.
About 20,000?
Yes.
And there are no other IRAs?
No.
Well, once he goes back and pays the taxes on the money that he screwed up, once he redoes his tax returns, let's see, can he redo?
Was he making this same money back in 2012, 13, 14? Yeah, okay.
So he can either go, he would go back and redo his tax returns for 12, 13, 14.
Amend those returns?
Amend those returns. You have another month to do the 2012, I think, and show that it should not have been deductible, pay the taxes and penalties up to date. Now he's got basis. He does an 8606 for each year. Now he shows basis, and now he's put in $16,500 into his traditional IRAs, maybe more. He has his basis. He has total value. If he converts it, if his basis is equal to or greater than his total value of all IRAs, he can convert that to a Roth IRA, pay no taxes. If the current value of all of his IRAs is greater than his basis, he converts it and he pays tax on the difference, the amount of money over and above his basis. His basis is his cumulative after-tax contributions. You need an accountant to help you out with this. An accountant that actually knows what they're doing, because the first one didn't seem to know what they were doing, based on what you've told me.
So does he have to wait for IRS to receive that letter before he can amend the returns?
No, you don't have to wait for it. You can have an accountant help you and just amend the returns, show that it was if it was truly non-deductible, you know, go back and do the right thing. So if he was making $200,000 a year and he was in a retirement plan at work, it was not a deductible IRA. Go back and amend the return, which means that you're going to show more taxable income for each of those years. You're going to have to, he's going to have to write a check, and there will be some interest and penalties on it. Bring himself up to date. Now he, you know, have the accountant help him get himself straight with the amended returns. Now you've got everything straightened out. You've got basis in your IRA or in his IRA. He can decide whether or not he wants to convert that over to a Roth IRA or not.
Yeah, the assumption we're making here, Eddie, is that he was making that amount of money back then that's over the limit, and that he was also participating in a retirement plan at work.
In each of those years.
Yes. If that is the case, then it's a deductible IRA is not allowed in his case.
So he deals with Fidelity. So he has to go to Fidelity and withdraw the money?
No, he's not going to withdraw the money.
He can't
withdraw
pay
the
taxes
money now.
On it.
If he withdraws the money now, it's going to be, you know, a taxable event plus a 10% penalty, and he's just going to compound the complexity of undoing things. Just get with an accountant.
Yeah.
Go over it with the accountant, the tax preparer. You know, make sure that it, you know, what you're saying is correct, that his income was too high and he was in the plan, and that the IRA contribution was not deductible. Straighten out each year at a time, and then get it all straight. Now that it's all straight, or once it gets all straight, now we can make the next decision of, should he start converting that after-tax money, because there's very little earnings in there, to a Roth IRA. But get it straightened out first.
All right, Eddie?
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. Glad you did. Again, there are limits to there are income limits.
There are.
Earned income limits for participating in an IRA for both single and married people if you are also participating in a retirement plan at work.
And at $200,000, that's of adjusted gross income, that's over the limit whether you're married or single. So that's over the limit no matter what. So if he was really making $200,000 or more in 2012, 13, 14, and he was a participant in the 401k in 2012, 13, and 14, he is not allowed to do a deductible traditional IRA. So if he's showing a deduction on his tax return, and he should have been receiving a letter, at least for the 2012
Surprise,
tax
2012
year.
Hasn't been caught because... Right.
So that's why I want him to go over it with a tax preparer to make sure that his numbers are jiving with what... You
right,
know.
And that's why I asked, and you did too, about income for those years, and was he participating in the plan? Because that's something that should come up right away.
Right. Now, last year, you wouldn't have gotten a result from yet. I mean, heck, some people haven't even filed their return yet. 2014's tax return, you may or may not have gotten a letter from. 2013 and 2012 tax years, you should have gotten a letter on something that is basically as blatant, as easy for the IRS to catch as that. If you look at your W-2, there will be a box that's checked that says retirement plan. And so the computers just go through and look, oh, retirement plan, traditional IRA deduction, AGI, over the limit, boom. It automatically triggers a letter.
Yeah, it will. And if you amend your return, you will have to pay some, you have to pay penalties, I guess. I don't know.
I would guess, because you shirk the IRS out of some money that you owed them.
Interest I could maybe see.
Interest probably, for sure.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, get with an account. All right, we're out of time. We've got another hour coming up. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, talk to Professor Plumber, any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors, the Brain Trust we call them, at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Stand by for more Buckett Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Canada, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.